Being charged with a criminal offence as a teenager can often be the start of a lifelong association with the justice system. Here in Australia, governments are considering initiatives like justice reinvestment, where money is redirected from prisons into community support programs for young offenders. But New Zealand thinks it might be able to teach us a few things about how to deal with young offenders. The centrepiece of their system is a youth court, but with some special elements including diversionary programs and family-centred mediation. Andrew Beecroft is the principal judge with the New Zealand Youth Court. He's going to be in Brisbane tomorrow for the Queensland Youth Justice Forum, hosted by Griffith University. He joins us now. Andrew, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thank you. Good morning, friend.
Your youth court system has been hailed as a revolution in dealing with young offenders. What was so revolutionary about it and the results it's been getting? Andrew, can you tell us?
Well, two things about it are revolutionary. Firstly, only a small group are actually charged. We know that most young people don't need to be charged, don't need to come to court. They offend as teenagers, they'll grow out of it. The frontal lobe is still developing, they'll make stupid, dumb decisions. And probably 80% of New Zealand young offenders aren't charged. They're dealt with by a specialist police youth force promptly, firmly, but in the community. And almost all of them never offend again. So we know keeping young people out of court is the first major plank of our system. And the second thing is if they do come to court, then rather than the judge making the decision-making in the first instance is delegated to what we call a family group conference. And that conference hammers out with the victim, with the community, what's the best form of intervention. The judge in the court is there in the background. The plan that is put in place comes back to court, supervised by the court. But usually a judicial decision is not required, unless it's a very, very serious case.
Okay, but the orders at the end of it have the full support of the court, of a court of
law.
But it seems to me from what you've said that central to this, to keeping kids out of the justice system, is the attitude of the police. Did you say a specialist youth police force?
Yep, we have 280.
Tell us more about that.
Well, we have 280 specialist police that are trained to a high degree there and elite group, they're paid more and they focus entirely on youth offenders. Any youth offender in New Zealand who's apprehended by the police has to go through that youth police force who'll make a decision, charge or not. And the law says don't charge unless the public interest absolutely demands it. Otherwise, keep them in the community. Court's the worst thing we can do for them.
So if the law says don't charge, what stick, in a sense, do the police have to convince the offender, the young offender, to not re-offend?
They put in place a variety of community-based programs. It'll normally mean meeting with the victim, community work, creative work in the community. Lurking in the background is the fact that if they don't comply with the community-based police-led agreement, they will be charged and they will be brought before the court.
And then if that doesn't work, if the police intervention doesn't, well, do we know the stats at that point about how many that come through or into the radar of the youth police force successfully get diverted from reoffending?
Yep, we know about 80%. It's extraordinarily high.
That's high, isn't it?
Yeah, but we think that's in line with what we know about teenagers. As teenagers, we do dumb, stupid things, but we normally grow out of it with good interventions. We don't need to criminalise it.
So the next step, if that doesn't work, is the family group
conference. Well, the second step is, if that doesn't work or it's too serious, the public interest requires a charge, it comes to court.
Right.
When it comes to court, as long as the young person doesn't deny it outright, and that's a small group, as long as it's not denied outright, then a family group conference is by law compulsory.
And who takes part in that?
The victim and family, the offender and family, police, lawyer, a trained facilitator, and relevant community agencies and input. It can be a conference of 10 to 30 to 40 people. It can take 1, 2, 5, 6 hours. It can hammer out a plan that might last for 18 months and that's brought before the court for approval. And if we think it cuts the mustard, we'll approve it. That is the sentence. That's carried out. If it's not completed, if the young person thumbs their nose at it, then the judge steps in and we make the court order.
We have similar elements, I suppose, here. We have diversionary conferences. We have, particularly with Indigenous offenders in some states, we have, you know, a similar thing, a family conference. Do you find, I know you've been involved in this court, I think, since its inception, but for certainly for a long time, do you find that the young offenders, that threat of a family group conference, the prospect of it, is, you know, enough to put them off reoffending? Like, how much do they would prefer not to have to come and answer to those nearest and dearest to them?
Yeah, I mean, a family group conference isn't a magic bullet, but it's tough and it's raw and it's emotional and it's confrontational. The victim has a chance to tell the young person exactly what they think. Mind you, the experience itself isn't going to be enough to turn a young offender around. They often have deep-seated issues of drug dependency, alcohol, family abuse, neurodevelopmental disability. So a good conference has information before it that can talk about what are the underlying causes and how can they be addressed. So these plans are, in one sense, and perhaps in every sense, way tougher for a young person than standing in the dock quietly while the lawyer does all the talking.
It's 12 past eight. Our guest is Judge Andrew Beecroft, the principal youth court judge in New Zealand. Andrew, it seems to me that crucial to this whole system are the sentencing options you have, and they seem to be pretty extensive. I've been looking at a list, participation in parenting education programs, participation in a mentoring program, participation in drug or alcohol rehab programs, a supervision order for 6 months for the person to be supervised by a social worker, a six-month order for a person to attend programs designed to address the causes of their offending. These are all good, but to be resourced. Do you have enough places and enough resources for these programs? That's key, yep. Isn't it?
It's key, and the answer is yes. There's a strong commitment in New Zealand to finding those programs. We would rather the orders weren't imposed, and we would rather the family group conference came up with a voluntary agreement to do all those things without an order. But lurking in the background is absolutely the threat of a formal court order, and we make them, and we do.
In Australia, well, there's been a lot of discussion recently, and it's an ongoing discussion about the high incarceration rates for Indigenous people in this country and Indigenous children. Recently, the Secretary-General of Amnesty International raised the alarm because the incarceration rate for Indigenous children in Australian jails is 24 times higher than non-Indigenous children and even higher than that in the state of Western Australia. Do you have similar figures in terms of representation in your jails or in your courts with Maori young Maori offenders?
Not as bad, but similar, and indeed Western worldwide, the issue of Indigenous young offenders is probably the biggest challenge for every justice system. We have 21% of our youth cohort are Maori, 60% of those in youth custody are Maori, so it's a fundamental challenge for us.
And what do the statistics tell you in terms of the success of the court, the youth court, in bringing those rates down?
Well, the numbers have never been lower. We're cautiously optimistic. We are at historic all-time lows in terms of both police apprehensions and court numbers. But we have to say that while the numbers for Maori young offenders are coming down and coming down significantly, they're not coming down quite as quickly as for non-Maori offenders. So that disproportionality, while the numbers are coming down, is getting greater. And that's a huge concern. But there are issues in one sense that are significantly bigger than any justice system can deal with. We're talking about long-term economic colonial disadvantage and probably some form of systemic discrimination also. Those factors play a part.
Just briefly and finally, what about the costs? I mean, there's obviously cost the community of having less young people offending, but there's also, as you say, the community wants to make sure there is an adequate response to people who are offending. But how do the costs of your system stack up if you can do a cost-benefit analysis, in a sense?
Coming down, because the costs are essentially the cost of good community-based resources, a small but efficient police force, with court hardly ever used, with family group conference accessing existing community resources. So we think cost-benefit, it stacks up beautifully.
Andrew, let's hope we can learn something from it. Sounds like a terrific system. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Graham.
Judge Andrew Beecroft is the principal youth court judge in New Zealand. He's a keynote speaker at tomorrow's Queensland Youth Justice Forum, hosted by Griffith University in Queensland.